In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
This year, all races matter. And I don't mean black or white or any in between, because all races matter all the time. No, I mean this year, all political races matter. This year, you simply cannot vote for just the top of the ticket, governor, and call it done. This year, you need to vote in every race, the so-called down-ballot ones that a lot of people tend to ignore because maybe they don't really know the person running, so they figure, well, maybe I shouldn't vote in this particular race. No, not this year, and it's pretty simple. If it has a Republican next to it, vote for them. It's that easy. The Democrats have messed things up so badly, you simply cannot go wrong voting Republican in every race. Everything that has happened here in Oregon and nationally, the Democrats have been in control of and responsible for all of it. Republicans have not been in charge of any of it. Runaway inflation, average hourly wages down, soaring prices at the gas pump, utility bills going up, the billion-dollar corporate activity tax that taxes businesses on all income, not just on their profits, crime and homelessness, chaos in the streets and in the schools, failing our students so badly they don't even check to see if they have any competency as they push them out the door with a worthless diploma and a thanks for the tax dollars. Everything the Democrats have touched, they have destroyed. And they can't blame Republicans for any of that. The Democrats hold the presidency, the majority in the House and the Senate, Oregon's governorship, and the state House and Senate. The Democrats have refused to even listen to anything the Republicans have tried to suggest. This is all on the Democrats. Look around you. Is this the America you want? Is this the Oregon you want? Well, there is hope. There is real hope this year. For those of you saying, well, Republicans are just as bad as Democrats, I would say in the past, that might have been true. Even as recently as 4 years ago, that might have been true of some Republicans. But this year, this election, there is a whole new crop of Republicans out there, and they are a different breed. They get it. They get what's at stake. So many I have talked to on and off the air, they truly get it. They watched horrified as the Democrats went full-blown socialist and seized control of the economy, wreaking havoc with shutdowns, stripping people of their right to refuse to comply with government mandates, their right to worship, their right to work, their rights to even speak up and say no. If you spoke up, you were called a science denier. You were threatened with losing your job, or you did lose your job. They divided families and friends. You were even accused of wanting to make other people sick. Meanwhile, Democrats, including our own Governor Kate, forced sick people into nursing homes, exposing our most vulnerable. And now we know that all of those mandates, the masks, the social distancing, the business and church shutdowns, none of that worked. And every day we found out more and more about the vaccines and injuries they caused and will continue to cause as they continue to push a failed narrative in a desperate attempt to make you obey. Putting aside COVID, if you spoke up about the chaos in your schools and the racist or sexualized garbage that they were throwing at your children, they called you terrorists and it called in the FBI. Well, it's time for those who pushed this, who pushed all of this, to go away. We appreciate you exposing us to socialism, but we don't want that. And if this is a taste of what you have to offer and where your ideas will take us, we don't want you either. It's time elected Democrats stand aside. This is all on you, so people with real experience can show you how it's done. And today, we're bringing you two such people. I'd like to welcome Sherry Helt to the show. She is running in statewide race for Boley Commissioner. She's also a mom. Small business owner, has served previously as state representative and served 9 years on the Lapine Bend School Board. Sherry, it's great to talk to you.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much, Mark, for having me and Carla.
Yeah, absolutely. So I imagine the question you have to answer all the time is when you're out on the campaign trail is, what exactly is Boley? And that's an easy one, the Bureau of Labor and Industries, B-O-L-I. But I imagine the next question you get is, okay, but what does BOLI do? And right behind that or along with it is, what does the commissioner of BOLI do? So let's start with that first one. What exactly does BOLI do? Why do we have it? What's its purpose? And what does it have oversight of?
So if you don't know what BOLI does, don't be embarrassed. You're not alone. It is a fairly common office that is misunderstood or not known at all by many folks. And so what I found on the campaign trail is that I've been doing a lot of civics lessons. And it's been really fun and enjoyable, and I've loved having those conversations with people. BOLI upholds all civil rights complaints. So if there's any form of discrimination, it would go through the quasi-judicial process of BOLI. So that is the first thing that it does. The second thing that it is in charge of is all apprenticeships for the state. It houses the apprenticeship program, which is very, very important. The third thing is fair housing. So if there's any housing discrimination, that BOLI makes sure that that is not happening. And then the fourth one is around veterans. So if you're a veteran, BOLI makes sure that you get access to any public application for jobs and a weighted application if you have a disability. And so those are the primary focuses of the Bureau of Labor and Industry.
So the other question there, aside from the obvious day-to-day management side of things, what does the commissioner of BOLI do?
So the commissioner, in my opinion, should uphold a vision and have a vision for leadership, because we're desperate for leadership in the BOLI position. We've had a lot of people that have come into this as a political stepping stone and really haven't done the work that needs to be done. And so this agency was closed during the pandemic. It didn't open until the end of May of this year to Oregonians that needed help from BOLI, which I think is failing. It's also failing in that it is backlogged in even assigning cases to civil rights investigators. And so we have people that have, you know, real issues that are not being heard and they're not having resolution. And so that is part of the issues that we have to combat inside of the Bureau of Labor and Industry office. And we also, the biggest thing that I think is really important is having a vision for our apprenticeship programs and connecting them with our K-12 system. So that they're more accessible, and building out those programs with vision and intention for the next 50 years of labor force for Oregon, because we need to build an Oregon workforce for our future, not our past.
So within that, you said, in your opinion, so does that mean that you don't think that the current leadership of BOLI is doing what it ought to be doing?
Yes, that would be what I think. I think it is a failing agency, just like so many of our agencies in Oregon are failing right now. We watch the unemployment department utterly fall apart and not be able to deliver benefits to taxpaying Oregonians during the pandemic. And we now are looking into BOLI more and finding more and more failures inside of the agency that are just unacceptable for our Oregon taxpayers.
So kind of on those same lines there, what kind of damage can the wrong kind of BOLI commissioner do?
Well, I'll give you an example. So around apprenticeships, we have 661 folks waiting to get into apprenticeship programs. And right now, they're not in apprenticeship programs because our ratios of journeymen to apprenticeships are the highest on the West Coast. California and Washington have 1-to-1 ratios. In Oregon, we have 3-to-2, which artificially takes down the amount of people we can put into apprenticeship programs. And with our workforce housing shortage, we know, according to Josh, the state economist, that we're 111,000 homes short. So that is why we have such a workforce housing shortage, is the price. There's a shortage, and with supply and demand, there's not enough housing to bring the cost down to where it's affordable by our workforce. This is directly related to the BOLI commissioner and lack of leadership. We need 13,000 people to take construction jobs to make these 111,000 homes come to fruition for our state. 6,000 to 7,000 of those jobs need to be apprenticeship trained. And right now, we are not even releasing how many apprenticeships we're doing a year.
Hmm. You know, it's really sad that, you know, to hear you speak there. All too often, government is the problem rather than the solution. And to hear you describe it, it sounds like Boley is the perfect example of that, or at least the current incarnation of Boley. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. Sherry Helt's website is sherryhelt.com. Sherry is C-H-E-R-I, and Helt is just like it sounds, H-E-L-T, sherryhelt.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. So if you'd like to know why Sherry, we're going to tell her story coming up and why Oregon needs her for Boley Commissioner right after this break. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Sherry Helt. She's running in a statewide race for a Boley Commissioner. You can go visit her website at sherryhelt.com. That's C-H-E-R-I. Helt is H-E-L-T. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. So, you know, I recently had a chance to hear you speak at a County Republican event, and I was really impressed, which is, of course, why you're here. So talk to our audience about your background and your businesses and also what really convinced you to run for Boley Commissioner.
Well, it was a privilege to speak at that event and be invited to it. I really enjoyed traveling the state. Today, I'm on day 8 of being outside of my own bed. So it's been just really fun to speak to people in their towns, where they're from, and mm-hmm. talk to them about their issues. And I really enjoyed that. So a little bit about my background. My husband and I own restaurants, and we have Zydeco Kitchen and Cocktails, which we have owned for since we created it 18 years ago in Bend. And before the pandemic, we had another restaurant that we lost due to the pandemic and due to all of the issues that followed with supply chain and labor issues. And it's, you know, it's been such an honor and a privilege to work alongside our coworkers and serve our customers and do what we love to do. And so we're very blessed in that way. When the pandemic hit, we were closed down overnight. So on March 16th, we had 104 employees. And on March 17th, we had 12. Our employees were put on, we're putting them on unemployment to get through the, what was, you know, proposed as the next 3 months. And the first thing that we did as restaurateurs was reached into our savings and paid for the next 3 months of premiums for our employees' health insurance, because we couldn't imagine going into a pandemic and not having health insurance for our coworkers.
Well,
because it was just terrible that they weren't going to be working with us, you know, and that was just such a hard thing. And there were so many businesses that struggled through that same, you know, we're not unique in our story. Unfortunately, our story was widespread throughout our state with the closures. And it is so important to me that we have someone that brings forward that experience and knowledge into rulemaking, because we can't let that knowledge be lost.
Sure.
It was a terrible time, right? And we have to make sure that we have stability for all of our employees in the state, and that we have, you know, we understand what it means and what disruption was caused inside of all of our working families' homes.
Sure.
And that's what drives me to run for this position.
So looking back at that time, when you're struggling, you're trying to keep these two businesses open, you're bleeding employees because you've been told to shut down, and with all of these onerous rules that were put in place, and looking back now, all of the medical science is saying none of that was necessary. Is there anything during that time that a good Boley commissioner could have done to help you guys in your situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the biggest thing is making sure that the Boley agency was functioning. I mean, the Boley agency was closed, and I think a lot of people needed to be heard during that time and were not able to be.
Right.
I also think there was a lot of, you know, things that Boley could have done with making sure that, well, employees are on unemployment insurance, making sure that they could come back to the job that they had left and preserving that. And so there is a program inside of Bully that does that. And it really needed to be scaled up and explained more, I believe. So I think a little bit of outreach, what could be done and how to apply for it. Also helping, with the unemployment insurance and making sure that they were connecting and being a good partner agency. Because when I was also in the state legislature. I represented Bend in the state legislature through part of the pandemic, the early part.
Mm-hmm.
And when the unemployment agency collapsed, essentially, and couldn't get out paychecks for 16 weeks.
Yeah, that was horrible.
And so it was really horrible. So from, our business was closed. I was also, serving in the state legislature. And in my office, myself and my assistant, Sam Herskovitz, we helped over 500 people get unemployment insurance by just calling and making sure to connect them to the right people inside the agency.
Well, I think that's really what was so necessary at that time, is they really needed to see somebody going to bat for them. And I think that's what was really missing, because, from my perspective, we have a small business ourselves, you're talking to us on it. But looking at how the state was really abusing so many businesses, and as though people didn't matter, they were making all these decisions about shutting down businesses, didn't seem to care one way or the other. And then to have people lose their jobs and then not help them with the unemployment side, that was really horrifying. I think that was what was so missing. So looking back again at that, should the government should the governor or Bowley or the legislature have the authority to just go in and do these sweeping closing of businesses under the guise of health? To me, that seems really dangerous and a huge overreach.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that there was overreach in the state of Oregon and what was put forward. And I think the most important thing is that, as an agency head, that we be nimble.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we work with the circumstances, because, as a Bully commissioner, you cannot pass laws and you can't change those things. But you have a lot of ability to change inside your own agency to make sure that there is enough nimbleness to help people. And so, really connecting and helping the unemployment department through that time where people were in their homes and not in their workplace.
Right.
Would have been how I would have managed.
Sure, sure. Especially since all of that was done because of government. It wasn't just something that was happening out there. It was because of those rules that the government had passed. And so they should have been there to provide a safety net. Okay, let's go and take a break. We'll wrap things up with Sharing Health after this. And welcome back. We are talking with Sherry Helt, who is running for Commissioner of Bowley. Her website is sherryhelt.com. That's Sherry, C-H-E-R-I, and Helt, H-E-L-T, sherryhelt.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for today's show page, which is 1243. And so, Sherry, and let's go back to Bowley a little bit. As I understand it, they have a current annual budget of $30 million. So it's not a massive department as far as state agencies go, at least in terms of their budget is concerned. Pennies, really, in comparison to some of these multi-billion-dollar agencies. So what does Bowley currently do with that money? And is that enough, or does it need more to do what needs to be done?
So the budget is currently $35 million with over 120 employees. And I think that is a more than adequate budget. I would not ask for any more dollars. My opponent likes to talk a lot about how she needs more money, and that's why they're backlogged and they can't do the job that they're doing, because she's endorsed by the previous commissioners that have gotten us to this place, and I am not. And so I'm representing change. But I think $35 million sounds like a whole heck of a lot of money for me. And I don't know about all of you at home. That's a lot of money. And I think it's a lot of money that we can do a lot of good with. We need to make sure that we are listening, that we are bringing customer service forward to a government state agency.
Yes.
And we need to create opportunities. And so that's the biggest place that I want to make change and focus on, is really designing a dashboard for all of the jobs that we have in our state and building a workforce for our future, for the Oregon workforce, not for our past, because we've been focused too long on outdated apprenticeships and not adding the new apprenticeships. We currently need to add healthcare apprenticeships, chip making apprenticeships, and childcare. We have very little childcare in our state. We're considered a childcare desert. We also have been losing chip making opportunities to other states. And chip making jobs pay $135,000 a year. Those are really good, high wage paying jobs, and we can capture them if we have the workforce. We also need healthcare. I mean, I was down in Medford, and they have 450 nurses that they are short. And so that means that the workforce that is there is working their tails off. And we need to get a healthcare apprenticeship up to help them be able to work through this shortage. So I really want to connect all of these apprenticeship programs with youth apprenticeship programs and connect them into our schools. I served for 10 years on my on the Ben Lapine School Board. And when I was on the Ben Lapine School Board, I was able to get career and technical education programs cemented into our school district. So we have 12 programs there. And what has never happened in our state is connecting those career and technical education programs to actual careers. And that's what I want to do with Boley, is make sure we go in and put in a dashboard of how many jobs there are in each area, where they're located, how much they cost, what the training is, and take the mystery out of finding a career for our students and really tie them into these apprenticeship programs that can be high wage paying jobs and get our workforce built for what we need for our future.
So as far as the trade's concerned, when I met you that night there at that Republican event, I had told you this little story, but I'd like to share it with the audience. Back in 2012-ish, I routinely sat in on NFIB board meetings as an invited guest, and I got to know a man who was a plumber and who ran the state's plumbing school at the time. And at that time, Kitzhaber was making this huge push to shove everybody into college and actively discouraging students, really, from pursuing careers in trades. I kind of had this stigma attached to it that, you know, going to college was so much better than going into the trades. And that plumber told me that that year they did not have one single student going through that school. And if memory serves, the year before they only had two, although it may have just been one, for the whole state. So in terms of these plumbers and electricians now, do we have enough of them? And if not, how can you really help encourage, as commissioner, how can you help encourage kids to pursue these kinds of jobs?
Well, so I think it's really important. We need to make plumbing, you know, a cool job, right? To make sure that kids get into that, because it's a really great job and really necessary. And no, we don't have enough plumbers and electricians or construction workers, which are our more traditional apprenticeships that we have now. Right now, there are 17 programs statewide that train electricians. In two of the programs, in Salem and Portland right now, there are 661 apprenticeships waiting on a waiting list that are ready to be electricians. And we need to make sure that as the next commissioner that we're opening up those opportunities, because we know that the pandemic has caused a lot of change in our workforce and a lot of shortage. But what we have to do is get people trained and build the opportunities for them to get to the careers that they want. And that, I believe, will start our workforce moving in the right direction.
So we only got about a minute change here with you. Your opponent claims that she's for small business, but then has skipped out on debates centered around small business. You would think that if you're all for small business, as she claims, you'd want to show that off. But in response, she's been no-shows at chamber events. And you said this in a press release, quote, "Christina Stevenson only wants to be the labor commissioner to extend her career of suing small businesses." Ouch. That stings a little bit. So can you give us some examples of that?
Well, we had a debate that we scheduled with the Gresham Chamber and the Portland Business Association, and it was on the books for 2.5 months, and she canceled that. She also canceled our debate in North Clackamas that we had scheduled with the chamber as well. And I think that after this pandemic, it is really unacceptable to not meet with business.
Sure.
We need a fair and balanced approach out of this office. It should represent unions and business. That's why it's called the Bureau of Labor and Industry. And we have to have someone that will do both.
Right.
And I will do both.
And as an attorney, that's her business right now. Do you get the sense that she's going to sue businesses less or more if she were to get commissioner?
I don't know any lawyer that doesn't sue people.
Oh, that's a good answer. Okay, so we'll have to leave it there. Sherry Helt, I want to thank you so much for your time. Her website one more time, Sherry Helt, CHERIHELT.com. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Sherry, thanks, and good luck going forward.
Thank you so much for your time, and hopefully I have earned your vote.
Well, you've definitely earned mine, that's for sure. And welcome back. We just wrapped up talking with Sherry Helt, running for Boley Commissioner. When it comes to your ballot and whom to vote for, just remember Sherry rhymes with Boley. Sherry, Boley. Her opponent, Christina, rhymes with, let's use the government to sue more businesses, because if we put businesses out of business, there'll be more unemployment for workers. It's not an exact rhyme, I admit, but it is pretty close. At any rate, I'd like to welcome Mike Erickson back to the show. He is a businessman running for Congress in Oregon's new CD6, which is basically the west and northwest sides of the Willamette Valley. Mike, it's good to talk to you again.
Great. Thanks for letting me be here again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we definitely wanted to have you back on because everywhere you look, it's just economic ruin. Your business specialty is in logistics. So when you win, do you think maybe you could put on a seminar to teach the Biden administration about supply chains and how intentionally disrupting them causes prices to go up? Because they clearly don't get it on their own here.
Well, that'd be wonderful. I'm not sure you'll take our advice, but that'd be great.
Yes, absolutely. You know, there was I hate to say it, but it was almost a laughable moment at a press conference this week with Biden's mouthpiece, Jean-Pierre, and she just keeps trying to blame high gas prices on oil companies taking profits. I mean, would you care to comment on the notion that high prices are the fault of oil companies?
No, I think that there's been when you got OPEC dropping their production of oil by 2 million barrels, that's a big impact. Mm-hmm. When you've got refineries having some issues out there on the West Coast, that's a big problem. So it isn't just necessarily someone doing price gouging. I think that's just a democratic political way of saying that's what's going on. Yeah. I really don't believe that.
Yeah, blame the rich guy is what it boils down to. So,
correct.
Yeah, if as JP asserts, it's, you know, just so easy for companies to cut profits, then why doesn't the government just so easily cut its own profits? I mean, this is really rich coming from a government that just blew through $2 trillion in spending, saying other people need to maybe rein things in a bit.
Well, as a small business owner, you know, you're in business to try to make money, and that's the free market. You try to make a good living, and occasionally you can make 10, 15, 20% profits or maybe more in a certain business. But, you know, that's always the goal. If you keep your costs down and you get a good competitive product out there and anywhere in the market, that's going to be great. For people to blame businesses to make profit is a big part of what's going on with inflation. I don't buy it.
No, I don't either. And I think some of it just comes down to a lot of people, unfortunately, with our education system, simply don't understand what profits are. And all it is you have more money at the end of the month or end of the quarter or end of the year than you had expenses. That's your profits. I mean, that's always a good thing. They act like, so much on the left, they act like profits are evil.
Yeah. Well, small businesses are sometimes different than big corporations. I mean, small businesses are truly the backbone of our economy, like one of my companies here. You know, we often get treated unfairly by government from all the regulations and, you know, just going through COVID, limited hours and employees not working in your office anymore and the shutdowns. And, you know, we're more at the impact of government than most businesses as a small business owner. So, I mean, those are just some of the things that I just think are wrong with our government. They get involved with us too much. And, you know, inflation's been a big problem here recently. But even during COVID, it was tough on businesses. So we need to be more pro-business and more. Will we treat the small business of this country a little better than we have been by our federal government?
Well, especially in the sense that your profits and other businesses' profits and the individual taxpayers' profits, that's what pays taxes. You know, I would think that the government would be at least grateful for companies making money, for people making money, and adding and building to the economy. And yet they act like anybody out there making money is somehow evil.
Yep. Well, inflation's more than just one or two things. They're trying to, and obviously fuel and gas is one of the biggest things, but you've got housing costs mm-hmm. gone up, rent mm-hmm. costs have gone up, price of food's gone up, and, you know, gas and diesel. I mean, those tractors out there in the farms that are growing the food, that diesel is one of the biggest components to a farmer's cost, that
yes.
and the labor. Yeah. So when diesel prices are, you know, $7-$8 a gallon, they just can't absorb that. They got to pass it on, and there goes your food prices up. Or if you got to truck your food across the country to the markets, you used to pay $2,000 a container. Now it's $5,000 to $6,000 for a full truckload going from Oregon farms up to the East Coast farms. That's 3-4 times what it was 2 years ago, and all those costs can't be absorbed by the farmers out there. So there's a lot to this, and supply chain, like I'm just discussing here, is a big part of our inflation as well. When you got the biggest cost for a FedEx and UPS is either the drivers or fuel. The truck drivers out there, when they haul their products around the country, diesel and labor are the two biggest items.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two biggest problems we're having out there. Gas prices are at a record high, and you got labor shortages, and people are demanding higher salaries because they can. There's big demand out there for good qualified labor out there. So those two costs have gone through the roof, and those are being passed on by all the trucking, transportation companies out there. FedEx and UPS have rolled out some of the biggest, what they call fuel surcharges. When you order anything from FedEx or UPS, and it may cost you $10, well, they add a 8% or 9% fuel surcharge onto it because of gas prices. So there's a trickle-down effect from fuel that affects everything, from the farmers in the field to the truck drivers to the UPS and FedExes. And that really's got to be looked at. And I think what Biden's done is just absolutely wrong. He's killed this country. His first day in office, he went through and had the executive order that basically shut down that Keystone Pipeline, bringing all that oil from Canada into the refineries down south in Texas and Houston areas. If we would have done that 2 years ago, our pipeline would be almost up and running right now.
We're
fully funded, and we would be having $2 gas and a lot cheaper diesel right now for everybody out there. And you talk about a one big item that hit inflation the hardest, that's it. He single-handedly made a decision to try to get people to go off gas vehicles and push more towards electric cars, which I think is the wrong timing. It should have been gradually, not all at once plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you. I think the theme for today's show is government getting in the way and then being baffled as to why things turn out the way they do. So let's put someone in there who knows what he's doing when it comes to business. Mike Erickson, hoping to do just that for Oregon CD6. We'll talk more with him right after this. You know, the only thing this government seems to know about business is to meddle in everyone else's. So maybe it's time to put someone in there who does know something about business, who's run his own successful company, and that's Mike Erickson, running in Oregon's new CD6. His website is MikeErickson4Congress.org. It's not .com, it's .org. Erickson is spelled with both a C and a K, so it's E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. Four is spelled out, not the number, MikeErickson4Congress.org. Or you can head to iSpyRadio.com for that link and others mentioned today. Just look up at the top for this week's show along the side or in the search box for show 1243. And so, Mike, continuing our discussion on the economy, since this is really the dominant issue right now for voters as they begin heading to the polls, but I want to go back to Jean-Pierre blaming profits and the oil companies making these profits, and that's the real cause behind these gas prices. Well, of course profits are up, because prices are up, but oil companies are not buying new oil leases because either the government is either charging too much or not making them available at all. And they've also made their messaging clear. They want the entire oil industry to die. And so when you're not having all of those expenses, of course your profits are going to go up because you're not doing the exploratory and everything else that you would normally do for the future. And that, of course, is going to have its own problems in the future here when they're not doing this exploratory stuff. But shouldn't the real message be, let's get government out of the way, stop interfering at every level in the market, and not just in the oil industries, but all of these businesses? I mean, and with your business background in logistics, what would you be advising your fellow congressmen that they need to be doing, that Congress needs to be doing to help businesses rather than attack them?
Well, besides being less involved in our businesses and our lives, that's the first thing. I think everyone agrees with that. The more government's involved in our businesses and lives, the worse it is. We just saw it through COVID for 2 years, and it's just terrible. They really should be involved with our businesses. But really, what's going on, our country needs to be energy independent as a priority. It's not just from a price at the pump point, but it's from a national security issue. Look what we're doing out there. We're literally begging Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, and other Argentina for oil, and we've got it right up north in Canada. We have the pipeline ready to go. I mean, it's a national security issue. We need to ensure that we can don't have to rely on other countries for their oil in the future. And then you look at it, that's what's happening with all the price of oil right now. It's really, we're tapping into energy, or the gas reserves are in our strategic reserves right now. I said they tapped 40% of that already. I mean, that really should be used for a real, real emergency, like some kind of war that we're in or something in the Suez Canal where they shut off all the oil to the West Coast here. So I don't think right now politically they should be doing that. They're doing it to try to drive down costs just before the election.
Right.
But I think blaming the oil companies for what's going on with record gas prices is absolutely wrong. There's a lot of other issues out there that are affecting that. Like I mentioned, the West Coast refineries were having some major issues. And so you can see that the West Coast oil and gas prices were up almost $2 more than anything past or east of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we rely on the West Coast refineries. And there was some real issues there with them being shut down for mechanical issues. So I think what the Biden administration is doing, trying to blame record prices on the oil companies, is absolutely not true.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You know, it's almost scary in some ways, but when it gets right down to it, with everything the Biden administration has done to try to destroy oil, it's almost shocking that they have any profits. And you know, maybe
they're doing everything they can to discourage investment.
Yes.
I mean, from the get-go, when right after he took office, that executive order to shut down the Keystone Pipeline. He made a lot of other commitments that he's going to do everything he can to discourage oil production or oil, you know, from the refineries, the technology and the exploration, everything having to do with investments in oil were really just shut down by the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. Causing real trouble for all of us.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's what they're secretly mad at is how are they still making any money after everything we've thrown at them, you know? But yeah, you know, in addition to everything else that they've done to mess up the economy, in a desperate bid to save Democrats and hopefully lower gas prices at the pump right before the election, as you alluded to, Biden is emptying our strategic reserves. I mean, we've already got a situation where the government has politicized free speech. They've used the FBI and DOJ to target conservatives especially, but there are other political opponents, most recently going after pro-life demonstrators while ignoring attacks on pregnancy centers. And now, as you said, we're using our strategic oil reserves intended for actual emergencies, and instead we're doing that to prop up the Democrats, hoping to bring gas prices down a dime or two before the election. I mean, is that really what we want our federal government doing, using resources for political purposes?
Absolutely not. That's just wrong. I mean, that's just what's happened here. They've got failed economic policies, they've got failed global policies, and they're just trying to do everything you can to salvage this election. I think the Democrats have really ruined this economy right now on their own, and it's on their hands.
It was
going great before they took over.
Absolutely. You look back 2 years ago, none of this was happening. And and even in the middle of COVID, we didn't have this kind of chaos in terms of the upsets of you know, the attacks on businesses, I should say. But, you know, it's not just America making nonsense decisions. It's all over the world. And another aspect of this is the European Union has an embargo on Russian crude oil that's coming into effect in 2 months, right in December, which is just real smart. That's what you need in the middle of winter. Except what's going to happen is Russia will sell crude to Asian markets, who will then turn around and sell it to Europe. And I really like how my producer, Carla Davenport, put it. We don't have money laundering going on. We have oil laundering. So, of course, prices to consumers will naturally increase because of all of this. How much punishment are these European governments and our own governments willing to dish out on their own people to prop up their own bad management?
Yep, I completely agree. What they're doing is just absolutely wrong. They're taking advantage of what's happening over in Ukraine, and you know, it's just going to be terrible for the people in Europe this winter.
Well, I hope that they are willing and able to stand up and really, I don't know what they can do over in Europe. They do these protests and stuff, and nothing ever seems to come of it. They had those protests a few months ago, when farmers were protesting the increase in nitrogen, and they were actually being told they couldn't farm. They were out in the street with these tractors and stuff, and nothing ever seemed to happen. So hopefully we can start setting the pace for the rest of the world. All right, everyone, stay with us. We're going to take a break here and wrap things up with Mike Erickson. He's running for Congress in CD6 here in Oregon. Head to MikeErickson4Congress.org. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking to Mike Erickson. He's a businessman specializing in logistics, and he's the Republican candidate for Oregon's new CD6 that's in the northwest side of, northwest corner, I should say, of the Willamette Valley and southwest of Portland. So, Mike, we were talking during the break there, and you have some actually terrific polling numbers. Are you able to share those with our audience at all?
Well, we're doing pretty well for the from day one. We were at the very beginning back in June, July. We had a 2-point lead. We grew to 3 or 4, and we've been consistent around that 4 or 5 point lead. And even last week, it showed us still ahead 4 to 5 points, which is within the close to the margin of error. It's like 3%. So we're just running hard as if we're dead even or a little down. So we're not taking any for granted. We just got to keep working through the tape here and
good.
Run this race all the way to its end.
Good, good, good. You know, I've been looking back now at what the Democrats did in their gerrymandering of the districts, and they tried to have 4 districts all touching or at least influenced by Portland. And now, because everybody in Portland is so ticked off at how the Democrats have run that city into the ground, that may really come back to bite them this year. And also, by trying to stretch it into 4 districts rather than really what it should have been as 1 or 2, they stretched it into 4. And I think they've really weakened the influence of Portland rather than strengthening it in all these districts. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this turns out. So getting back to the economy, it's one thing when dippy-doo press secretaries spew nonsense about the economy, supply chain issues or profits, things that she clearly does not understand, or this administration for that matter. But these are issues that are hitting or about to slam real people. Right now, the Northeast and the Great Lakes region, my old stomping grounds, they're already experiencing early snow earlier this week. Last week, it was announced that New England may be facing some energy shortages this winter. This is serious stuff here, and I know that a lot of experts are already calling for a very cold winter, and we've got that coming, and at the same time, they're saying, hey, we may not have enough energy for people, and the Biden administration and elected Democrats are acting like they don't have a clue what to do other than to blame somebody else for the mistakes they keep making. Can you address this?
Well, we should have been working towards being energy independent from day one, and that's the big problem. It's Biden, the Biden administration in the rear. It's Biden Democrats across the country. People are seeing it. They made some serious mistakes by trying to be moved too far to the electric green technology so quick that it affected everybody out here, from the farmers and people driving their cars. And not everybody can afford electric cars. I know that's the goal here, but you know, but really, I mean, there's been so many other things that are affecting the price of food, the price of fuel. I mean, heating oil, fuel costs are up. I mean, we're literally in a recession right now. The Treasury and the Federal Reserves have jumped up interest rates to record levels right now. They're supposed to come up with another 1 point. I mean, that's amazing what they're doing to get it to maybe 8%. They're pushing housing and homes out of reach of most Americans that are looking for a first-time home. So in Congress, we need to do more to try to rein in some of these things here and hopefully get Biden to reverse his plans on the Keystone Pipeline, other things, so we get back to being energy independent here. So that's one of the things I'm going to push hard for is, you know, he's got control of both the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. And I think if we take control of the House, we're going to have a good say on, you know, any legislation and what he does going forward.
Yes, it's amazing the power of the person. That's the one true power that the House side has for sure. So in mid-October, there was a poll on Breitbart, I believe, 62% said Joe Biden's economy is getting worse. And 70% believe that the current condition of the Biden economy is either very bad or fairly bad. Is there anything that Biden has done that is worth allowing to go forward, or does his whole economic premise need to be upended and replaced?
It's been a disaster. His economic policies and his national security policies have been a disaster. Look what's happening. We've got the war there with Ukraine and Russia going on, and I mean, it wasn't very strong, and you know, you look what's going on over there in Taiwan right now and letting China get its way. And you got, you know, his national security issues are and policies have been disastrous. Economic policies have been a disaster. And it's really hurting Americans. I mean, we're a lot less secure in our country here. We're a lot less safe on our streets. And we're a lot less inflation killing Americans. So it's literally, we're going to be putting people on the streets this winter, and it's just terrible. And we have to do everything we can to get our food prices and housing prices and rent back to a level that people can afford. I mean, his policies, I'm not sure what he was thinking, to tell you the truth.
Hmm. Well, you know, so much of leading the economy is instilling a sense of leadership and confidence in people, that they can have confidence in you, that you know what you're doing, and that you're moving in the right direction. And that, I think, is so much of what Trump was doing. He was constantly talking about, you know, how things are positive and moving forward. And I think that instilled an awful lot of confidence in people, as we saw in 2019 when things were really firing on all cylinders. And then, of course, COVID came in and that really destroyed so much of it. But looking ahead, is there anything that your opponent has said or wants to do that would make things better?
Well, my opponent, no. She wants to make it worse. She wants to put tolling on I-5 in Wilsonville. She came out and voted for that about 9 months ago. She literally voted for a toll that could be up to $5 per car going between Fulton and Salem on I-5 by the Wilsonville-Willamette Bridge there. It's already been passed, and the Governor Brown's pushed it through, and ODOT's getting ready to implement it here in a year or so. Hmm. I mean, my opponent adding $5, people can't even afford that right now. So it's, come on. She voted against law enforcement to make her city less safe on the street there. Five different bills for interfering with a police officer. You can't arrest them. Or different traffic violations. If you drive with your lights out or your taillights out, you can't pull them over in the middle of the night when they have no vehicle lights. Things like that that she's admitted maybe were overreaching. But those are just terrible for both the crime perspective, safety perspective. On the economy part of here, she's voted for every major tax increase. And so I don't think we need to be increasing our taxes. We just need to do better with the money we do have. We don't have a tax problem. We have a government spending problem. You know, and the people of the state need help. They need real strong advocates in Washington, D.C. to fight for them, to spend their tax dollars as if they're hard-earned dollars in your own pocket. Yeah, I'm a small business owner, and I started my company 30 years ago in Tigard. You know, I help companies fix their supply chain problems and save money, and I look at their supply chain budgets and say, how can we save you money and reduce costs? I want to bring that mindset back to Washington, D.C. and be a true advocate to spend our money more efficiently and effectively. And we don't need to raise taxes. We just need to be more efficient with the dollars we do have. And, you know, I'm going to bring that common sense business perspective back to Washington. Well, I'm not bringing a political agenda. I'm just fed up with this country, the direction it's going. We're a great country, and we need to get back to being that great country again.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, looking at what she wants to propose there on a federal level, I have zero confidence that she has any real knowledge about the economy. So if you like the direction we're heading down, which is down and off a cliff, go ahead and vote for her. But otherwise, if you want to get things going again, Mike Erickson is your guy. Mike, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
You bet. Pleasure to be here. Look forward to it again.
You know, there is a lot we just didn't get to with Mike, like the Heritage Foundation downgrading our military in their annual report. That shouldn't be a surprise. Although in answering a different question, he did briefly touch on one that we had wanted to bring up, diesel. He mentioned the price of it affecting everything that is shipped, but it's more than price. Zero Hedge and Bloomberg are reporting on the shockingly low supply of diesel, but we only have 25 days of it, which would put us running out the week after the election if they don't get on this. Who knows? Maybe Democrats want to punish you if you don't vote correctly. At this point, would it surprise you? If you believe in big government, there is nothing off limits you'd be willing to do to puny citizens. Nothing the Democrats want to do will make things better. This year, make the right choice. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.